You might have noticed that Pat and I are pretty fussy about our finances and our investments.
Yeah, a lot of junk doesn't make it past our bullshit detectors. But one thing that we've both used for many years is ShareSite. It records all dividends, franking credits, transactions, and performance easily in one place.
You can generate reports for income and capital gains, which makes tax time super easy. And ShareSite is completely free if you have 10 holdings or less.
So we've partnered with ShareSite to help support the podcast and provide all our listeners who upgrade to a paid plan a saving of 33% off the annual plan price. If you start with a free plan using our link, you'll still get that discount if you upgrade to a paid plan in the first 60 days.
Just head to ShareSite.com/fire and chill to get started.
Welcome to the Fire and Chill podcast, a collaboration between Dave from Strong Money Australia and Pat from Lifelong Shuffle, where we're going to have regular conversations about fire, investing, and living your best life. Okay, welcome back, everyone. Today, Dave and I thought we'd have a fun little thought experiment. Dave, what if we woke up today? We were 18 years old, we had no money, no qualifications, and all we had was like just this strong desire for financial independence.
Do you ever think about this, about what you would do if you started again?
Sometimes. Not very deeply, but just like little minor things. It's like, that car I bought when I was 20, why?
I've had this question a couple of times in various, sent to me in various ways and described in various ways, but the underlying question is pretty similar. Like, what would I do such and such again? Or what would I do if I was in this scenario and I was 20 and, you know, I wanted to achieve the same thing? And yeah, so it'd be good actually today to flesh out all those things and kind of not only say what we might do differently, but, you know, how we would deal with this starting from scratch type of scenario. And I suppose it also gets into, can we repeat like what we've done already? Could we do that starting again? Or would some of it be harder or would some of it be easier? So I think that might be interesting to talk about.
Yeah, that will be interesting. And a small digression, when you first started full-time work, like the first 2 days or first 3 days, was that just like, do you remember that time? Was that just like a huge shock to your system? And you're like, oh, what the hell is this?
That's a good question. I'm not really sure because I did, when I was still at school, I did like the work experience type situation, you know, where you're like in year 10 or year 11 and do like 1 day a week work or 2 days a week work.
Yeah.
Did you have that at your school as an option?
No.
Oh, okay. So it was an option at my school for the kids who like weren't really interested in school.
Nice.
To keep them kind of motivated, I guess. So I had done like full days work before like leaving school and eventually getting a full-time job. So I did kind of know what I was getting into, but yeah, the first week or 2 weeks or whatever of work, I enjoyed it, you know? It was quite good. Like you work hard, whatever, during the day, you go home, you kind of feel like you've accomplished something and you know you're getting paid for it. So it's pretty good. What about you?
Yeah, nice. I mean, I definitely worked full days, like worked weekends. And then during some Christmas breaks, I worked like really a lot of hours at the local Kmart. So I had that experience of doing like full-time work, but there was always like an end date in sight. It's like, oh, I'm just doing this for the holidays and then I'm going to start full-time uni. So it was like, it wasn't that mentally challenging. But then when I started full-time work and then like 1 week rolled after the next, after the next, after the next, and there was like just no end in sight. I'm like, oh, what the hell is this? Like, this is, I feel tired all the time. What's going on?
So how long was it before you started like maybe thinking about it? Like, oh, wait a minute, this thing goes on forever.
Not very long. Not very long at all. I didn't really have a path out or a strong view of how I would become financially independent, not knowing those words. Didn't really articulate those thoughts and coalesce them into a goal. But they were definitely there. And even at like that first career job, it was like a lot of us were quite young in a similar sort of role. And it was an office with a few of us young people. And I remember like there was talk of investments and,
okay.
You know, among us. And
like, are we talking like pub style stock tips, you know?
Oh, no. But no, it was more like theoretical spreadsheet scenarios of how we could ramp up in leverage and buy several properties over the course of 10 years.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah. The whole buy 30 properties before your 25 sort of news.com.au type stuff. But I didn't end up going down that path.
All right. So let's, in that spirit, mate, let's take it back to us being, let's say, 18 years old or something like that, and we've got no money, no qualifications. And let's kind of flesh out everything we can think of how we'd approach that type of scenario. So I guess first things first, we'd need to make some money, mate. So how are we going to do that? Are we going to, we're 18, right? So are we going to study or are we going to go straight into work? What do you reckon?
Oh, this is a tough one. I'm reasonably certain that if your only goal is to get to financial independence as quick as possible, then going to university for 3 or 4 years just delays saving and investment for 3 to 4 years. Even though you end up earning more money down the track, you're not going to be earning more money than someone who's gone straight into work for at least 5, 6, 7 years. Because by the time you're out of uni, you're a zero experience graduate. You're still on a very low wage, whereas someone who's been working for 3, 4 years, you know, they started off on a low wage or salary, but they've presumably worked their way up a little bit in the meantime.
That's a good point, because I suppose that would be the counter argument, right, is that you finish uni and then you're on a higher income, but that might not actually be true because you don't have experience at that point. So like you said, you'd have to start at a lower level, but someone who started earlier in a lower level in without the qualifications may reach a higher level in whatever their job they have, and plus they've had that extra time to save, so they've kind of got some compounding starting behind them. And yeah, so that's quite interesting.
And they don't have that uni debt as well that they have to pay off. So it's, yeah, certainly when I started full-time work as a graduate, I was not earning as much as like the non-university qualified workers I was around, not even close. So I will, however, say that maybe if you're that way inclined, going to university and then working, earning a bit more later down the track is a more enjoyable way to reach financial independence. Because instead of just working for 10, 15 years straight.
Because you don't have to be at work for as many years because you get to study rather than, is that what
exactly.
You mean?
Exactly. Okay. And being at uni, it's an awfully free lifestyle. Like you're the master of your own destiny. It's like you study as much as you want. You do part-time work as much as you want. You have plenty of free time. So
you get a taste of semi-retirement at uni.
A bit. It is a bit like that. Yeah. And you're young and you got a lot of energy. So if I were to do it again, I would probably go to uni again. But that's not necessarily because I think I could get to financial independence quicker that way. It's more because I think it's a more enjoyable way for me overall to get there.
And there'd be no right answer to this question, because you could go to a regular job straight out of school and it doesn't pay that much and you stay in a lowish paying job for the whole time. But on the other hand, you could go to uni and you could come out and you could earn a higher income, or vice versa. You could get a relatively non-technical job without going to uni and earn a higher income than someone who went to uni. So there's so many scenarios that there's no actual one path is faster, one path is better than the other. It doesn't really work that way.
No, not at all.
So with your, would you study the same thing and get the same job? Are you pretty happy? Like, are you pretty certain you would follow the same path in that respect? And you'd have the same kind of income, expected income over the years and all that?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't even know what else I would study, to be honest. Like, this probably still where my interests are at and where my strengths are at. So that would be, yeah, I wouldn't change that.
And how would the income compare now to when, I guess, you started, which is probably 10 years ago or so at this point? The income be same, better than before, not quite as good as before? And how hard would it be to kind of get that job again?
Oh, even when I finished uni, getting that first job was not guaranteed. You had to hustle. You had to really hustle to And even with hustling, you had to be quite lucky. So I, yeah, count myself fortunate that I was able to find a graduate position out of uni. But I think the wages and the salaries, they're pretty comparable to what they were when I started, which was like in 2011, 2012 sort of time. But I haven't been on seek.com.au looking at graduate positions in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I can imagine. No need for that.
So I'm not totally certain, to be honest.
So it sounds like your path would be pretty similar in this respect, in the work scene.
Yeah, probably. How about you, man? Would you do anything different? Or
I wouldn't go to uni because, again, I'm not super interested in studying anything in particular. So I would go straight to work, and I think I'd probably get the same job basically that I had before, which was warehouse work and forklift type work. And it's not that hard to get. Like there's decent amount of work for that type of thing around a fair bit, and it's not hard to get into because I'm from memory, I got my forklift ticket in like 2 days. So it wasn't all that hard. And then you can start working a warehouse, like making up dispatch orders and whatever without any experience usually. And you can kind of get on the job training. So it's quite easy to get in. And so if you get into like a large-ish warehouse, the pay would be pretty decent. And then also if you do like afternoon or night shift, which I would probably do, the pay is even better again. So it's actually pretty good pay for the work given you, but you do have to put up with the nights or maybe afternoons or whatever. But yeah, I didn't mind that too much. I actually liked working afternoons because then in the morning you get up and you've kind of got some freedom for the first like 5 hours of your day or whatever it might be. So I quite enjoyed that. So in terms of the income, I guess the income is for that job, I still know people that work there and the income's kept going up like with inflation. So that would be basically the same as before. And yeah, it wouldn't be too hard to get that job because usually places like that, you might start as a casual and then they have a limited amount of full-time employees. And then when someone leaves, they usually hire a casual who's like who they like, who's quite good and reliable in that. So I'd probably do pretty much the same thing, man, in terms of work and pay and everything. I don't think that would be too different.
Yeah, nice. And because you came out of school at 18 and you said you'd pretty much do the same thing and just find a job straight away. But another sort of interesting thing to look at is those first like 4 to 5 years out of high school. Most of us can still live with our parents if we can find work and if we're on good terms with our parents and all that sort of business for those first, you know, 5-ish years at least. And so that's like another like win for starting to earn earlier rather than later, because it's 5 years of very low expenses, very, very low expenses. And you can pretty much save like all of it.
Massive. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Well, not quite all of it, but
yeah. Well, we can get into that in when we talk about like what we do about housing and that a little bit later, maybe, because that sounds like a possible housing strategy.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
All right, so still on the income side of things, would you try and earn extra money like through climbing the ladder or through like overtime or maybe even a side hustle, Pat? What do you reckon, mate? How would you bother earning extra cash or what? What would you do again?
I'd like to say now I wouldn't, but the truth is 18-year-old Pat and 21-year-old Pat and 23-year-old Pat was quite keen and quite energetic and
hungry.
Was very hungry. He was very hungry. And he would do as much overtime as he could get his hands on. Even back to my earlier story, when I worked at Kmart between university years or between school and whatever it was, there was a time during the Christmas period where I was working like 12, 13-day fortnights. Like I was working the maximum number that they were allowed.
Yeah.
To give me days in a row.
That's interesting. I remember doing that at my first job at Big W because it just opened and it was in our town. It was super busy and I was like working pretty much every evening. And then that's kind of when I dropped out of school at that point because I was working, you know, from like five at night till 10 or 11, you don't have time for homework and stuff. And I would rather do that work than go to school. So that's kind of what ended up happening. And then I left school and I was doing that pretty much. But that was enjoyable. And and even the same thing again. I was doing like the maximum days at the start because it was super busy.
Yeah, exactly. And you're super excited about earning money for the first time as well.
And you're at school, right? And most people don't have a job. Well, they didn't have at my school anyway at that age. And if you're, you know, how old would I have been at that point? 16, maybe 17. Even if you're only earning like $300 a week or whatever, you feel like you are rolling in it.
It's a huge amount of money for a 16, 17-year-old.
It's amazing. You feel like you're rolling in it. So that was pretty fun, actually. Yeah. So I suppose in terms of like earning extra cash, I'd do the same thing again because how would you earn overtime, Pat? Because you don't get overtime for your salary, mate. What's the deal there? How would you make that work? Or would you just climb the ladder?
Yeah, just climb the ladder. There are certain government organizations that will pay white-collar employees overtime.
Okay.
And I happened to work at one of those government organizations earlier in my career.
Oh, okay, okay.
And at the time, I did work overtime and penalties and stuff. So, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
That was good.
My work was like time and a half or something like that. Is that about right for you as well, for overtime?
Oh, yeah, it was.
Was it more?
I think the first couple of hours was time and a half, but it was more weekend work that we did because we had plenty of weekend work. So I think Saturday was time and a half or double time, and then Sunday was double time. And
how good is it getting that massive hourly rate?
Oh, my God.
It's amazing.
Public holidays was just ridiculous. Just crazy, crazy amounts.
It's hard not to do that stuff because you're getting paid so much per hour.
Mate, you work a Saturday and Sunday and you've earned as much as you'd earn in the rest of the week.
Yeah. It's awesome. And what I like to frame it to myself in this way, like by doing those extra hours, whether it's an extra day or like an extra few hours a day or whatever it is to build up that overtime, because of that juicier hourly rate, when you like average it out across your like 45 or 50 hours or whatever you've done, your average hourly rate is like it gets bumped up. So it might go from $30 to $35 an hour or something like that, you know, because you've earned that juicier rate for like 5 or 10 hours.
Yeah. And I don't know how it was at your work, but for whatever reason, Saturday and Sunday work wasn't just 8 hours. Like it wasn't a typical day. It was 10 or 12 hours. So you really would earn more on Saturday and Sunday working than you would for the 5 days previously. So that was always good fun.
Yeah, nice. That's nice, man. Yeah, I'd definitely do overtime again.
Yeah, I would too. Not so much now.
Yeah, it's a bit different. You get a bit lazier, don't you, as you get.
You do.
You get a bit comfortable.
Yeah. The reward payoff is just like, whatever.
Yeah. All right, so if we put some numbers to it, my income, I think that job that I used to do probably pays about 80K these days. And like with overtime, it's probably more like 90 if you do a bit of overtime there. So that's pretty similar to my previous kind of journey. What about yours? Your numbers would be pretty much the same there on the income side?
Certainly. I think as a graduate, I think I started at about 60K. And I think that's just bumped up with inflation as the years go by. Like graduates start on more than that now. And I think they still have access to overtime as well. So
yeah, nice.
No different.
Yeah. All right. Sounds
in
good.
Terms of earning capacity. Anyway.
All right, let's move on to housing. So would we buy a place to live in or would we rent? And where would we choose to live? Because I guess like if we're starting without a job or whatever, we can pretty much choose where we want to live. What would we do there? Because this is a big decision, I suppose, for everyone. What would we do, mate?
Yeah, so back to our discussion a touch earlier. I mean, if you can live with your parents and save a huge chunk of your paycheck and that's a comfortable relationship, and there's almost no better way to get a head start and, you know, get yourself a little booster out of the gates. So
for as long as you feel comfortable doing that.
As long as you feel comfortable doing it. I personally wouldn't do it until like 30 years old, or I wouldn't suggest. Look, some people do that, and some people, they say that it's cultural to just stay with your parents until you get married. I personally wouldn't, or I wouldn't suggest that, because I like the independence and I think you gain a lot and you learn a lot by having that independence away from, you know, parents that can take care of you when you...
Gotcha.
But definitely for a few years while earning money, and
maybe
save
till you're like
and...
21, 22. That's a good head start in itself, man. If you can get 3 or 4 years like that, super low expenses, off to a flying start.
If you're coming out of uni too, maybe until you're 24 25 is probably where I'm like, you really need to get out of here personally. Anyway, like live a young life away from your parents. But that's just a personal suggestion anyway.
All right. So after that, then what would you do? Rent your own house? Buy a house?
Share house.
Yeah. Okay.
I share housed until I was 28 or 29 or something
until
like that.
Until you partnered up?
Even while I was partnered for a year or two. So we were quite happy to do that to save money. And, you know, we got on with our housemates. It wasn't like we hated each other or we locked ourselves in our rooms. But yeah, eventually we wanted our own space, so we got it.
And that was pretty effective, I take it.
Oh, for sure. Especially in a housing market like Sydney's, halving your rent and saving that, huge. I don't know about you, but rent is routinely, or housing costs are routinely more than 50% of my total expenditure.
Yeah, they're about 50% of ours. But see, that's the thing. Is that because our other expenses are just low? Could be that, you know, that's skewing it. It might not necessarily be that housing is expensive. It might just be that I think it is mostly, especially on our side, that our personal expenses are not that high.
That is true. But if you can also then reduce your housing costs, like that has a huge impact on your total expenditure or the in a percentage term anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, that's interesting. So you wouldn't, what would the process be then? You'd share and then would you buy later, like kind of like you've done now, or what do you think?
I mean, I think in hindsight, seeing how the East Coast has performed over the last 10 years, it's hard to say that you would have been better off doing anything just except buying a house as soon as you could on the East Coast. I think you've had a very different experience on the West Coast. Which
a little bit.
Again, you can't know these things in hindsight, can you? I could take that exact same attitude over to Perth and I would look back and be like, oh, phew, dodged a bullet there. Good thing I didn't buy as soon as I could. But it's hard for me to answer this question without that sort of bias, knowing that house prices have exploded, in the last 10 years. One thing I can say though is getting that leverage very early on is very beneficial in general, because generally asset prices go up. So the more exposure you can get the earlier on, the better you'd be. And the easiest way to get leverage is by buying a property.
Are you saying because the effect it has on your wealth, or are you suggesting because it locks in your house cost, so the you're not exposed to the price of the house or whatever being 50% higher when you eventually want to buy it?
I think both. Again, this it's looking in hindsight and knowing what the property market has done. But looking forward, listen, I'm starting today. What, Pat, you don't know what the property market's going to do in the next 10 years. No one knows. Presumably it'll be higher, like we assume over time that these asset classes go up in price.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, tough one.
Not sure. Well, you've got current prices, current mortgage rates, all of that.
Look, I would probably buy a house, but only because I can do it with leverage. If you were to say buy a house outright or put all of it in a share portfolio, I'd be like, oh, it's the same exposure to growing markets either way. You know what I mean? I'd just put it all in shares. But because I could get that leverage at that young age, I would say better off buying that property with that leverage and then taking your spare funds and growing a portfolio on the side.
Yeah, that sounds good. So I would probably also buy somewhere close to where I was working. And if I was working at that old job, I could probably buy here where I am now, because it's actually not that far away. I think it's even closer than where we used to live. So there's that. And like you said, I've had the opposite experience to you. So prices in Perth are more or less the same as they were like 12 years ago. So it would have been better to be a renter over that time. And not only that, but 12 years ago, mortgage rates were like they averaged around 7%. Now they're like 2%. So they've gotten two-thirds cheaper, right? The amount of interest you're paying on a given level of debt. And so if house prices are more or less the same as they were before, that makes them hugely more affordable than they were. And incomes have kept growing slowly over that time. So we've had a very different experience from you over there, mate. But given what the numbers are today, I would probably buy as well, because it is in Perth, I find it extremely affordable. So yeah, that's what I'll do. But in terms of starting out, I'd probably do the share house thing as well, or the parents thing if that's an option. And then, so that keeps your housing costs pretty low. And then while you save up and then get your own place, yeah, I would do it that way. And then once you're in your own house, the cost's probably not too much given mortgage rates. And yeah, just keep the overall price to a reasonable level, and so that you're still able to save and go from there.
Yep. Perfect.
So, all right, let's talk about our living expenses, mate, and what we would expect our savings rate to be. And so that kind of will help us figure out how long it would take us to reach FI starting all over again today.
Ooh.
So we kind of now know our incomes and our housing expenses. So we'll talk a little bit about these metrics, and then maybe we'll get into like any lifestyle changes we'd make or stuff we might do differently.
Yeah. I think, again, just being sort of hungry for it, my living expenses would be lower than they were at that time, because I hadn't really heard of FI when I was just getting out of university or just getting out of school. So though I was a natural saver, there was no intentionality behind it. There was no driving force.
There was no like intense focus at that stage, because you didn't really know it was a concept.
Yeah, exactly. So if anything, I would probably have saved more money if I start today than I did when I was in my early 20s.
Yeah, interesting. It would be the same for me as well.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So on like that sort of graduate salary of around 60K, do a lot of overtime, a lot of weekends, you know, or a few weekends, get that up to about 80K. After tax, that probably comes back down to 60 to 70K or something.
Yep, yep, yep.
Living at home, if I were, easily save
90%.
Like 45K without even trying. I mean, really, because no rent, no electricity. My parents always stocked the fridge. So it would probably be like that for a few years, like saving 2 or 3 years, so like just saving 50K per year.
Yeah, well, that's an awesome head start for anyone who can do that. Seriously.
Oh, yeah. That's a huge head start. Huge head start. And then by the time I did, I would get into share housing and expenses go up a bit, quite a bit, really. Should still be very possible to save 40 to 50% of my income at that time.
Because your income would have been higher by then as well.
Yeah, it would have crept up a little. Would have definitely crept up a little. I probably would still be doing overtime. And I still wouldn't have that many expenses or that many responsibilities. Like I'd have to pay for my portion of the rent and start buying my own food and stuff. But I think a savings rate early in life of over 50% is very, very doable for someone who's keen and who isn't, you know, buying brand new Toyota Hiluxes and
yeah. And that's what we're saying. We're saying like what we would do if we had this desire at a young age and we're starting all over again. We're not saying, hey, everyone should be doing this because of whatever, you know? It's not like that.
No, of course not. I would take some of that early money saved though, and I would still travel a bit. So I wouldn't quite save as much, because that was good fun and I remember those memories fondly.
Okay. Good stuff. I just thought of something. So I just kind of realized a trajectory that I would go on, or like a way I would maneuver my income and expenses probably throughout my 20s if I was starting again. And let me know if this kind of resonates with you or you're not sure about it. So, you know, you're starting off on a lower income and you're trying to keep your expenses as low as possible by living at home and then share housing and whatever, I think I would manage my lifestyle and my income and finances in such a way that I would want to hit a certain amount of savings each year. Maybe it's 50%, maybe it's 60%, whatever. So if my income went up, then okay, maybe I can move into a share house now or something like that. Or if my income wasn't that high yet, okay, I'm going to keep everything, like all my costs, quite minimal right now so I can still save X amount. So I would pretty much base my lifestyle around wanting to save a certain amount. Not sure what that number would be off the top of my head, but I would just kind of balance it at the time.
When you say a certain amount, you mean a certain percentage, not an absolute amount.
Yeah, probably a certain percentage of my pay that kind of felt like a good amount of progress to make, you know, that would fit with the time frame I wanted. Maybe it's like 10 years. So then maybe my ideal savings rate would be like 65%, which is like what it takes to retire in 10 years pretty much. So if that was my target, I would kind of try and manipulate my income and expenses so that I was kind of hitting that, to kind of meet that target of retiring in 10 years that I was hoping to achieve. Well, how does that sit with you? Would you do a similar thing or not quite?
No, yeah, definitely a similar thing. I think this is the same as like if you ever do get a raise, you earmark like most of it for your savings and you give yourself a little bit of lifestyle inflation.
Well, that's the thing. It's like a very, very tightly controlled lifestyle creep.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's like lifestyle creep on a leash.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's exactly what you described. It's like if you're always hitting a certain percentage, then every time you earn more, you save a portion of that, but you take a little bit for a bit of lifestyle creep.
Yeah. And if it's like 65%, like this example, that's, call it 2/3. So if your income goes up by $10,000, you can spend an extra $3,000 and you're still keeping that same savings percentage.
Yeah. And an extra $3,000 can make a huge difference on a, you know, a low expenditure lifestyle.
Yeah. It's a couple of hundred a month, man. $250 a month, isn't it? Yeah. That's pretty good.
Well, let's say you're spending $40,000 a year. That's an almost 10% bump up in the amount you can spend. Not quite. Like my math isn't
perfect there. But that's pretty close, mate.
And you're saving all this extra money to boot. So
yeah. Yeah, I think I would approach it that way. Try and hit that same sort of time frame that, like, because I'd want to retire, I want to reach FI as soon as humanly possible. So I'd be extremely hungry as well and try and manipulate the numbers so that I would hit it in less than 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, just the sort of way I'm inclined, I am kind of like you, very hungry, really want to get there really quickly. So I would go hard early on, like really early on. But eventually I'll start to feel a bit fatigued and I'll be like, yeah, okay, let's slow this down a bit. Let's take the foot off the accelerator.
Yeah, I reckon after probably like 5 years of intense effort, then you're like, oh, okay, I need to like relax a bit now.
Yeah,
and exactly. You probably can relax a bit because if you've gone hard, like high savings rate for 5 years and investing hard and whatever, you'll be in a pretty good position.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's pretty reasonable. All right. So actually, how long do you think it would take you to reach FI again? Because on your current trajectory, how long would it be from when you started concentrating on it, let's say, to your FI date, whether it's not 100% or whatever, but more or less there? What's that time frame look like now? And what would it be like, do you think, if you had to guess starting again, based on what we're saying?
So from when I really started concentrating on it, to when I think I will be in a really comfortable position to say, yep, I could stop work and I have zero worries, probably about 10 years at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to start again, I don't know, I'd probably be the same. I'd get the same sort of head start from concentrating on it early and saving while with my parents. But like when I started on this intensely concentrating on this FI goal, I had a bit of a head start from my previous savings that I just kind of accumulated over the previous five-ish years. So in both cases, it'll probably end up taking me the same amount of time. But I would get there earlier if I started today in terms of my age, because I would have started earlier. But anyway.
Yeah. Gotcha. At a younger age.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I would get at a younger age. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Mine would be pretty similar as well. So It's funny because you, when you're imagining starting again, you get to start again with like the experience and the knowledge that you have. So it's almost like it's hard to compare, but you kind of have to do it that way. You can't do it any other way.
Yeah.
So in some ways, that's an advantage because you know what to kind of focus on and where your energy is best rewarded. So that would kind of speed things up a bit as well. Without even consciously fleshing out examples, it would probably just speed things up a bit because you've got kind of that intuitive, I don't know, probably built-in knowledge of what to do and stuff.
It's also, when you're young, it's kind of really hard to empathize with your older future self. It's like, oh, don't worry about that guy.
He's an old man. He's an old man. I'll worry about him later.
But, you know, being that slightly older and slightly future self, now you're like, yeah, I'm going to kick that young dude's ass into gear and get him work.
Get your shit together, mate. So I reckon about 10 years, maybe a little bit sooner. Yeah, I reckon pretty similar to my journey before. So that's the advantage of starting now with your kind of knowledge that you've kind of built up over the years. So in comparison to that of my scenario before is I was probably able to retire like slightly earlier, maybe a year or two earlier because my partner had equity when we met in her house. And so that leads to like a higher level of wealth and starting from zero, obviously. So there's that in comparison. But yeah, I think about 10 years is a good time frame. And it's interesting that we both come out at the same rough time frame, really, even though our numbers and that are probably different. And yeah, interesting. All right, so a little bit on lifestyle. We did touch on it a little bit, but would we be more frugal starting again, especially since we would be starting from scratch, I guess. So what would be different to our lives now, and would we do anything different to what we did before?
Do you mean more frugal than I am now, or more frugal than I was when I was 18?
Both.
Okay. And the answer to both is yes, I would be more frugal.
That's interesting. Don't you think that people would, I think some people would have the expectation that now that we have the experience and whatever, they would be expecting us to say, oh no, we would try and enjoy the journey a bit more and not save too much. Because some people have provided that feedback that they wouldn't save so much and they would spend a bit more to have more, you know, quote unquote, enjoyment of the, you know, different perks here and there. So it's interesting that you're saying, and I'm going to say the same thing, that I would actually be more frugal if I started again. So it seems strange almost that we're saying that.
Oh, okay, okay. If I started from 24, 25, when I would be more frugal than I was at that time because I wasn't really focusing on FI at that time. So I was like just, again, kind of natural saver, but, you know, spending and not really thinking too much about saving my cash. So I'd be more frugal than I was then. But when I started to focus on FI, which was more around 2017, would I be more frugal than I was at that point? Honestly, I don't think so, actually. I think I would probably be about the same.
Which was pretty strict. Is that right?
It was pretty strict. It was pretty frugal. Yeah.
And that's obviously, how would that frugality compare to your life now? A bit different?
Now, yeah, it's different. I just think about it less. I'm just not as concerned. I'm more comfortable in my net worth position and my road to FI is more guaranteed at this point, let's say. Like now that we've saved so much money, I could coast at this point and I'd be fine. Whereas back then it was, you're zero. Like you need to get this snowball rolling.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to start itself and it's not going to roll itself. Now my snowball will roll it all by itself. So I don't need to be as focused.
It's just a few flakes at that point. So you should be furiously trying to gather up flakes to build this snowball.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I suppose the real thing is when you're starting at zero, for me anyway, this was like my top priority. This was like my goal in life. So that wouldn't change. That would be like my top priority. So I would be super frugal again. And yeah, it's especially when you're starting with nothing. You want to build that wealth as fast as you can. And then later, once your wealth grows, like we were saying a little bit earlier, you can kind of take the foot off a bit and relax and you spend more and whatever. I think that's feels like a natural progression and that's kind of the way it should be.
Yeah. I agree.
So yeah, I would maybe compared to my journey before, I would maybe spend less or find ways to, I would try and find ways to make it happen sooner. So I might have, yeah, I might have like limited holidays, and then like when you get annual leave and stuff, spend more time at home, because then you got like, it's almost like you're building in semi-retirement a bit earlier, because you get like a few days off here and there, a few weeks off here and there.
Yeah.
I love that. I just love that free time to just do whatever you want. Like even if, even if you don't go anywhere, it's just so good to have that free time. Just, I don't know. I'm just obsessed with that.
You love it.
That freedom, I guess. Yeah.
You're just there now. You love it.
Oh, couldn't give that up, man.
You need to draw yourself back to young working Dave, where you didn't have that freedom.
Yeah. So he was hungry for that freedom. So
yeah, he was very hungry.
He just wanted to do whatever he had to do to get there. So
to get there. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, I think it would be pretty damn frugal until obviously that wealth grows, and then you can relax a little bit. Once you see the progress is happening quite quickly and you can kind of see the finish line, then you can, oh, okay, things are going pretty good. We can relax a little bit.
I reckon until at least a few $100,000 in investments before easing back a bit.
Yeah, because before then you feel like, okay, I'm still at zero basically.
Yeah,
that's how I felt anyway, like until it starts growing and you get to maybe a quarter of the way there or whatever, it still feels like you're at the starting gate, so you didn't want to do as much as you can.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, so next one. Would you go for semi-retirement, mate, and jump off the ship a little bit early, or would you still go for complete financial independence? Because we've spoken about semi-retirement a fair bit and even promoted it as a pretty damn good goal for people to shoot for. So what would we do starting again?
Yeah, which is kind of a question of what I would do now, because I'm not 100% of the way there. I like the idea of semi-retirement a lot, but I'm also, again, the kind of guy that doesn't want to save just enough to facilitate semi-retirement, then semi-retire. I'd rather get, 60, 70, 80% of the way there to full FI and then maybe go semi, because in the background, that's still churning, that's still growing, that's still doing its thing.
So it's really cushy then.
It's really cushy, and I'll get to full FI eventually anyway. It's more of a coast FI, flamingo FI type scenario.
Well, I mean, if you're 70% of the way there, that means your portfolio is pretty damn big.
Yeah.
And in your case, your part-time income would be pretty damn healthy.
Yeah.
So it would probably only take like realistically a couple of years to go from 70% to 100%, because you'd probably still be saving while being in semi-retirement.
Yeah, that's true.
So it would only take a couple of years at that point.
Yeah, you're right.
So even if you stopped at 50%, you'd still be saving probably. Like you'd be living on the part-time income, probably save a little bit, and then the portfolio is still compounding. You're probably still only 5 years away from full FI at that point.
No, you're right, yeah. In fact, I could have just started my career part-time.
Semi-retirement straight out the gate.
No, you can't do that until you got some experience, I think. No, you're right. I could jump off this train. If I could find work that suited this lifestyle, I could jump off this train at any time now, and that part-time work would definitely still cover 100% of my expenses.
Yeah, so semi-retirement is pretty, I mean, it's pretty compelling. You get so many of the benefits without needing 100% of the money. So it's pretty damn cool in that respect. But I still wouldn't like the fact that, okay, I have to work a little bit. There's just something about not having to work at all and getting to full FI that's just different. It's just different.
Of course. But would you do kind of like what I just described? Would you still keep a total positive cash flow that you could still save some towards full retirement, and you would have started with a huge amount to begin with in those earlier really hungry years, so that would keep growing in the background and you'd still have a positive savings rate, so that you'll get to full FI anyway?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. It'd depend on the time how I was feeling about work and how I was feeling about, yeah, it would depend at the time, I think. I'm not sure how to answer that right now.
Yeah, fair enough.
The goal would definitely be full FI, but it's possible I would jump off early if the right kind of enjoyable part-time work came up somehow, but I'm not sure what that would be. So,
well, look, everything would look enjoyable compared to, you know, 7 days a week of backbreaking, picking, packing.
Yeah, I don't know, man. That's tough. It's tough. I'd say full FI would be the main goal, but I would consider semi-retirement if the right kind of scenario came up. As long as it was still getting me, like, making decent progress. I don't want to be semi-retired for, like, 15 years or something like that. Like,
yeah, just, yeah.
That doesn't cut it, man. It has to be faster than that.
Yeah. No, I would get, like I said, I'd definitely get like 60, 70, 80% of the way there before I semi-retired, because then the portfolio will just, it'll take you the full way there in a few years.
Yeah, worth considering. I'll keep that in the back of my mind if I have to start again ever.
It might happen, man. You never know.
Never know. I don't have enough insurance, so it might happen.
Ah, yes, exactly. But Dave, this is the big one. This is the one that everyone wants to hear, particularly from you.
Oh.
If you were to start again, how would you invest? Would you still do investment property?
Oh.
Oh, would you just go all into shares or maybe some crypto?
If you've read my blog for any period of time, you've probably seen me say that I wouldn't go into property again. And I've just been completely won over by how easy and how stress-free and how passive shares are, and starting with basically no money, you can start investing immediately. You don't have to wait 1 or 2 years to save up a deposit, and then you don't have the giant costs of stamp duty and all that shit. And then there's no kind of negative cash flow, and there's no overhanging loans to deal with, and there's no, like, I don't know, there's just like too many headaches and too many expenses with investment properties, I've found. And especially with a time frame of 10 years or less, if you don't get a good, like I mentioned before, if you don't get a good run of growth and you're holding a property for like 7 years, you might not make any money out of it.
Yeah, you might lose money.
Yeah. That's just the way it goes. Like, I know it hasn't happened recently, but that's definitely possible. So
yeah,
that's the thing, because if your time frame is 10 years and you have to build up a portfolio, you can't buy all of those properties in the first 12 months. You can't do it. So you're going to have to buy some of those properties when you're only 5 years away from early retirement, or maybe less or whatever. So the amount you're going to get in returns after cost in that time frame is going to be poor, maybe, you know? So it just doesn't line up all that well with the time frame that I would have. Not to say it's a bad investment or anything like that, but just the combination of like all of the costs, the simplicity of shares, the passive income all the time, the time frame that I'd have, and being able to start compounding immediately, even with smaller amounts, it's still, I just wouldn't do it again. I would just go for a simple share portfolio, kind of like what I have now, and just go from there. Super simple, super laid back. What about you, Fat?
Yeah, no, I still don't like investing in property.
That's only because you haven't done it, mate. You were just saying before how you want to get that leverage under your belt early and get those compounding gains happening. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Tell the truth.
I do like the leverage, and that I've always said that the only thing that makes property investment attractive is the easy leverage. And I think I've been pretty consistent in that position. So I might get one property as a hedge in the location I'd like to live eventually.
Oh, what do you mean? So you wouldn't, is this before you, oh, wait. So are you saying,
The same one property.
So, okay. So you would buy your future house early as an investment to lock in the price.
And it might not end up being your future house, but it hedges you to that market. So you could sell and buy in the same market, so to speak. So you are, quote unquote, locking in the same price minus transaction costs.
Okay, I gotcha. Ooh, I thought I cornered you there, mate. I thought I got you to admit you'd buy another property.
Nah, I would have owned multiple properties.
Oh, man.
Nah, that gets too cash flow negative and too many things can just pop out of nowhere.
Oh, I thought we had something juicy there. Juicy story for the tabloids, mate.
I was actually speaking to a mate last night who's head of his strata committee, and they've recently had to replace the roof on the apartment block to the tune of like, I think, $700,000.
Strata's the worst, man.
Ugh.
We own a few strata properties and it's just a nightmare. They're just crap, man. There's just so much rubbish and there's so much fees and it's just...
You know what's really funny?
It's just garbage. Yeah, what?
What's really... He's the head of the strata committee and he was having to convince the people in the bottom level apartments that it was still worth replacing the roof. Because uh-huh. Apparently there were some people in the bottom apartments that was like... I don't need a roof.
Not my problem. Yeah.
Not my problem.
Yeah.
And he's like, no. If rain gets in, it'll penetrate into the structure. It'll screw everything up. The apartment block actually needs a roof, even though you're a bottom level apartment.
And then they're like, okay, well, you can get it, but I don't want a special levy for it. I don't want to have to tip in extra money for it.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're right. Strata's an absolute headache.
Oh, man. It just becomes like bickering and politics and rubbish. And there's all these rules, or you know, what you can and can't do. And then you got to get permission for certain things. And it takes weeks and months to do anything at all. And it's just, it's not fun, man.
No, but I digress. No, I'm still definitely into shares. That would make up the large driving force of my portfolio. If I was to buy a property, like I said, it would be more as a hedge into my housing market that I'd want to live in eventually. And I would pay the minimum possible on that property while I invested in shares on the side.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'd probably consider the same as well. Didn't touch on this before, actually, but because we're saying that we probably would buy a house and you'd want to get it sooner rather than later to kind of lock in the price, would you buy with a super tiny deposit in that case and pay LMI so that you can buy it sooner rather than waiting an extra, whatever, 1-2 years to have the full 20% deposit or whatever and avoid that cost?
Yeah, I would do that for sure.
Yeah, I would do that too.
But yeah, like you said, like once you start share investing, it's just so easy. There's no $700,000 roofs that need to be replaced once every 15 years or 20 years. And you just happen to be the poor sucker that owns the apartment when that happens, you know? So it's just nice and simple. You don't have tenants breaking windows and saying, oh, it was kids outside. It wasn't me.
Yeah. I like the, I think we've mentioned this before, but I love the fact that you're only ever going to get a positive income stream and it just gets bigger and bigger because you keep buying. It couldn't be more enjoyable in that respect.
Yeah, it is good. It is good.
So related to investments, mate, what about super? So we're starting early. Would we put any extra into super? Would that play a part in our FI journey at all?
No, no way.
Not at all. Not even a dollar. Nothing at all. What about the tax, mate?
No, you're not even paying that much tax at that. You're not even on a super high marginal tax rate when you're at that age, like, and you're earning that little.
Well, what about later on then? Once you're getting a little bit closer, you're on the high tax rate, just divert a little bit to super, mate, get that tax shield.
Am I still more than 30 years away or from access?
Oh, yeah, you're still like 28, 29. You haven't retired yet. Because if your FI time frame is expected retirement at age, you know, 30, 32, whatever, so you're not quite there yet, but you're getting close.
Nah.
Nah?
Nah. The thing is, right, if you're on a 37 cent tax bracket, let's say, that means you're earning $20,000?
I can't remember what they are.
I can't remember. But anyway, even with just the compulsory super contribution from your employer, that's already like $8,000 to $10,000 a year going into your super. Now, we did discuss the other week, what if you were a contractor, a sole trader, would you put any in yourself to get some of that tax?
No way.
No way from Dave.
And it's not because we're anti-super. We're just pro financial independence as soon as possible, I guess.
Yeah, and these answers change. The older you get, the closer to super you get, the less net worth you currently have and the closer to preservation age you are. So it definitely changes as time goes on.
Yeah. So obviously with our time frames of, you know, expecting to leave work or whatever at 30-ish, somewhere around that, then obviously focusing on a personal portfolio and not chucking extra money into super is the best option in our case.
Yeah. And then if the market goes gangbusters and you want to put extra into super down the track, you can do that.
Oh, after you've retired?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Let's say the market just goes crazy, right? You get like 20% gains year on year for like several years in a row. And then your dividends end up like punching you into the 30-cent tax bracket.
Oh, no. What a tragedy.
Oh, what a tragedy. At that point, if you really wish, you can start taking some of that excess income and putting it into super to tax shelter it.
Can use your tax bill to wipe your tears away or how much cash you're drowning in at that point.
Oh, man.
All right. So we did actually, just on that, if we're talking about super and possibly it's better, you know, if we're at a later stage. So what if we started at age 40 instead of, you know, 20 or whatever we're discussing now? What would we do differently then? Not just in terms of super, but across the board of all the things we've discussed. Can you think of anything that you'd do differently there, Pat?
Yeah, I mean, if I was starting at 40, so I was zero at 40 and going from there, I would definitely use super.
Well, it's almost impossible you'd be... Well, that's okay. So you mean zero wealth outside super, but you would still have wealth inside super because I'm assuming you haven't been unemployed for 20 years.
Maybe I've been a sole trader for 20 years and I've put $0 in.
Wow. Okay.
So let's say
that's possible. Yeah. Yeah.
It is possible. I would say it's very possible. I would say that a lot of sole traders would, like the rest of the population, this isn't a pick at sole traders. A lot of people don't think about super whatsoever until they start getting within 10 years of accessing it.
What percentage of people do you think would voluntarily put money into super if it was a choice? So if we got to keep that $5,000, $10,000 a year in our income instead of super, and super was a case of you just have to tick a box and tell your employer you'd like to do it, how many people, like what percentage do you think would actually do it? If you had to guess.
Yeah, guess 10%?
That might even be, yeah, I think 10%.
I mean, how many people access their super during the COVID, you know, you were able to access your super? How many people accessed it that didn't really need to access it?
But that's a bit different though. That's not necessarily the same for the same reason, because you might as well access the money if you can use the money now. Because imagine there was no ruling on that thing, right? And you can access the money now and then do whatever you want with it. I'd take all of my super out right now because I can do more with it right now in my personal life than I can.
Oh, so you just invest it though. Like you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's,
that's not the same thing.
Yeah. I think it would be a low percentage, like 5 to 10%.
Yeah, I think you'd get very few people opting in. Most people would use it to save for a house deposit, thereby driving up house prices. And we're all in the same crappy situation we were before, except now we have no super.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was a little tangent there. If I was starting at 40, so this is where it gets interesting because we're assuming, I guess, that we've been working for the last, you know, 15, 20 years. So in this case, I would very strongly consider semi-retirement, because if I've already been working for 20 years, you can be pretty sure I'm getting like
really
sick of that
sick
shit.
Of
I'm getting sick of that shit, mate. I want to hop off. I want to hop off as soon as possible. So I would try and build a half decent portfolio, maybe enough to pay for like half our expenses or just pay off our house or some shit. And then you can move to part-time income pretty comfortably. And I would definitely do that at this point rather than working full-time to get to full financial independence, because I've already been working for 20 years. I want to hop off and enjoy some more free time. So I would definitely change my approach under this scenario. So, and then part-time, you can cruise part-time, maybe invest a little bit, and then you've got your super still going a little bit in the background, and get to retirement age, you've got a bit of part-time income or a bit of investments, bit of super, maybe pension. You're pretty good.
Yeah. Would you go for the barefoot investor sweet spot? You know what I'm talking about? It's like having just enough money in super that you still fully qualify for the pension. And so you have like, you don't save like a full FI amount. You save enough to really milk the pension system.
It depends. So if I had some investments and, you know, part-time income, whatever, you could then sell some investments if you had a bit too much, pay off your house if you hadn't already. And then it's obviously you're kind of getting, it's kind of a win-win at that point. But I wouldn't overly try and manipulate the situation to try and extract more dollars. Like it just wouldn't really, I wouldn't work too hard on that, but I would have a look at the situation and see if it was like simple and I was going to be happy with the outcome anyway. And so I would look at it, but I wouldn't overly worry about it or work too hard on it.
Yeah, but I mean, you wouldn't be working hard on it. You'd be working less overall.
No, I mean, if it's like, oh, you've got to move this money here and then you've got to do this. And then I don't know if it was, I don't know. I'd have to look at it, I think, properly.
Yeah, no, if I was starting at 40 with Bupkis zero, yeah, I would definitely try and aim for that. I think the Barefoot Investor called it the Don Bradman or something. I can't remember. I would aim for that. So save enough that, like you said, I could probably semi-retire, carry me the whole way through to preservation age, and then have a super balance that at pension age I would get the full pension and hopefully buy a house beforehand, because the way the pension works, it hugely benefits people who are homeowners rather than renters.
Yeah. So that's what I had in mind. Like if you've got a stack of investments and a half paid off mortgage and you're kind of approaching retirement age, then you can, yeah, take some investments, pay off the house, and then you come under the cap and you get the full pension, whatever. It's pretty simple. You're not like overly manipulating the situation to get a better outcome.
Yeah. You are manipulating the situation to get a better outcome, but
not overly. Like you're not like, oh, I'm going to give this to my children. I'm going to hide this over here. I'll put this chunk under the mattress and then I'm going to dig a hole in the backyard and bury this amount.
But I mean, whatever, if the government's going to make it like so lopsided, then you might as well be on the right side of that lopsided outcome. That's not really on you to undo that lopsided benefit.
Yeah. What about would we put extra into super at this point? I'm not sure I would, because I mean, you might have some super already and you would still need to build up, if you've got zero outside super, you'd still need to build that up to a somewhat okay level to reach this semi-retirement goal that you'd have at this point. So I don't think I'd put extra into super if I was starting at 40 with nothing. I'd want that outside super portfolio to help me semi-retire as soon as possible. And you're assumedly already starting with some super at this point, which will keep compounding over 20 years.
Okay. I mean, if you're starting with some super and that's enough, then sure, you wouldn't put any extra in. But if you had $0 in super...
But putting extra in there super is still not going to help you semi-retire earlier.
Sure it will.
Why?
Because...
Yo, okay, like you've still got wealth you can access later, but it's not like it doesn't reduce your need to work now.
No, you could end up retiring earlier overall by putting some in super now. I know that's hard to wrap your head around.
Yeah. Because you've got slightly higher wealth overall, so you can live on your part-time income while that higher amount of super keeps compounding.
Because
you paid slightly less tax.
Exactly.
Not a huge benefit, I wouldn't think. Like not a huge mover of the needle, I don't think.
Well, let's say you're well off, like you're earning a pretty good income at 40. Let's say even though you've been like crap with your money and you've saved $0, you're earning an okay income, you're at six figures. If you can put 25K into super, like the cap, for 3 years in a row, and then they'll let that compound for the next 20 years, you potentially have an extra, say you saved your tax over those 3 years.
$80,000 or something?
Well, like you could have an extra 20K now that can compound.
Over two decades?
Over those two decades, yeah.
So maybe 80K less inflation, maybe 60K?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that's a couple of grand a year extra income maybe?
Well, that's a whole...
Well, you know, if you're turning it into a passive income, that's maybe $3,000 a year or something. 60K turns into 5K income or something.
Yeah, that would be about right, yeah.
Not a huge needle mover, but it's okay.
I mean, it is a huge needle mover. Like $3,000-$4,000 a year extra. You could work for one less year, say, if you only save or grow your portfolio about 60K a year. You could work one less year in total if you're just aiming for a total amount, which at this point you... you kind of have to focus on. But you're right, you still need enough to get you there.
Yeah, I think I'd still prefer the access and the control for that extra 20-year period. Yeah, tough one, that one.
But it isn't. Okay, it depends on how quick you're going to semi-retire. I'm still thinking of like a 10-year time frame. So by the time you get to semi-retire, you're only 10 years away from access. So you're at 50 and you're like, okay, I can pull the needle now, slow down a bit, and super is only 10 years away.
Yeah, okay, I see what you mean. So you're probably, at that point, you're probably not going to live on investments. You're probably just going to live on your part-time income and then wait till your super kicks in later.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's where we're seeing it differently, because I was thinking of either building up investments or like reducing your expenses by paying off your house. And then that does kind of immediately reduce your need to work by age 50 or whatever. But you're thinking of living on the part-time income solely and maybe not having investments or very little investments except for a bigger super fund, which catches you later. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, you might have some investments, but yeah, the super fund will definitely be there to catch you later. Like, I wouldn't run on $0.
Yeah.
Make me very uncomfortable. Okay. But also at this point, like, you're probably going to hit your super annual cap anyway. So you'll end up saving a lot outside of super as well.
Okay. Interesting. All right. So how about if we were single and we didn't have partners, how would that kind of change our journey or change what we would do or change the numbers in any way?
I think you'd agree, like, we'd definitely still do like some sort of share housing, like living in a big
3-4-bedroom house, one person doesn't make that much sense.
It makes very, very little
sense. When you're working 50 hours a week.
When you work to pay off for that home. Yeah.
Yeah.
So rent out a room, live in a share house, still try and keep expenses low that way.
Do you think it would be – so I think it would be easier to keep your – obviously, it depends on the situation and the spouse, but it would probably be easier in some cases – to keep your expenses lower because you're not having to like consult with each other. Like when you make decisions, you can just do whatever you want pretty much all the time. So you don't have to, you know how one person wants this, one person wants that, and then you kind of compromise and meet in the middle.
Yep.
So, but you can like, if you want to go like super ninja, hardcore, frugal, you can do that. And there's no one else is going to be affected by that. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of, it would kind of simplify things in that regard. Or on the other side, you also don't have that relationship to balance in terms of your working hours. So, you know, working a shitload of hours, you come home, you're tired, grumpy, whatever, and then you have less time to spend with your spouse. So if you're single, that's not something you have to consider either. Obviously, you have to consider your mental health if you're working extreme amounts and how much you're enjoying it, but there's less to consider overall, perhaps. You've got a little bit more flexibility and freedom over those decisions.
Yeah. You can knuckle down and focus more if that's what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting question, because in other ways, like having a partner does make things, assuming like you're both like decent people, it does make things somewhat easier, because, you know, instead of cooking every night, say on average, you're cooking every other night on average, even though you're both probably cooking all nights, but whatever, like, you know what I mean?
And you're also spreading out some of those expenses over two people, you know, instead of one person, which that can make a big difference.
Yeah. But you can get a lot of the way there just by share housing. So you share rent, you share electricity, you share gas.
Yeah, same sort of thing. I think I'd do the share house thing for a while and then consider buying a house as well. But then it does get a bit strange, I guess, if you've got this 3-4-bedroom house, whatever, and you're working a lot. So you could rent a room out at that point. That would be kind of nice extra income or / reduce your expenses, however you want to look at it. Do you think you'd still be able to get to a nice high savings rate as a single?
Yeah, for sure.
So same sort of thing like I was saying earlier, you would just basically navigate your income and expenses in such a way that you would hit it, regardless of like whatever situation you're in. Do you know what I'm getting at? Same thing?
Yeah, I know what you're getting at. Yeah, absolutely. Like I think we're both just that way. We're programmed that way. Like, neither of us are going to sit in a 4-bedroom house that we're paying $1,000 a week rent or something and be like, this is okay. Like, neither of us are ever going to sit there and do that. So for sure, I would find a way to, like, just cut those expenses so that they, in my mind, they're reasonable and they're proportionate to my overall income and my life.
Yeah. All right. So overall, we've talked about quite a lot, mate. So overall, do you think it would be easier or harder or basically the same if you were starting today with what we've discussed? And is there anything else that you'd do differently?
I think it would be roughly the same. Like, I think, if anything, like, we have much better access to information now. Like, you can get started on the right track much quicker and with much more certainty than previously. So
that's a good point, because I wasn't finding too much stuff back in the very early days.
No, not
around this. Around this thing, I wasn't finding blogs or anything. I was just reading about investing, really, and wealth in general.
Yeah, yeah. And even if you were doing that, like, it was probably hard to sift through the good from the bad. It probably still is hard to sift through the good from the bad, but I just feel like,
well, there's more of it now, I guess.
Yeah,
way more. So maybe that can, I suppose, it's a pro and a con that there's so much content now.
Yeah,
but overall it's a pro, I think.
Yeah, access to the markets is easier now than it used to be. Like, it's cheaper and quicker and easier. Yeah,
how much has it changed that much in 10-12 years? I think brokerage has come down.
Not even just brokerage, just even think about our just an Australian shares fund, the MER on that. How much has that dropped in the last 10 years?
By half or more, you think?
More.
More, okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. It would be. I suppose there's cheaper options than...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
God, I'd have to dig through the history books to find out about international share funds. I don't think there were that many options.
Oh, when was... I think, wasn't VGS created in, like, the 2013? ETF anyway? 2014 or something?
2014. Yeah, something like that.
Oh, there you go. It didn't even exist back then. You'd have to have the managed fund version.
Yeah.
Or just pick something else, maybe, if there was other stuff available. I can't actually remember.
Or invest in the US domiciled funds, which come with a bit of a headache.
Wow. Yeah. That's interesting. So things have changed more than I expected.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting, man. And those all-in-one funds didn't exist. VDHG and DHHF, they didn't exist back then.
No, and...
not even 5 years ago, I don't think.
And just think about exactly what information was there out there about passive investing, particularly in Australia. Like, what websites?
Oh, like, what are we talking about, 2010? Oh, yeah. There were...
nothing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Was there even, really, like, an Australian thread on the Bogleheads? Was the Bogleheads forum even up? I don't even know.
No, I don't know. That's actually a long time ago in terms of the internet, the history of the internet.
Yeah, it is. It's a long time ago. And I think the information about index funds has proliferated, particularly in Australia. I can't speak to the US, but in the last decade, index funds proliferation and the information about them has been really good. And 10 years ago, it might have been definitely not impossible, but it would have been a lot harder to find that information and settle upon it.
Yeah. And I suppose if you consider, like, financial independence, was that even, like, a term in Australia 10 years ago? Probably not. Not really.
I mean, even Mr. Money Mustache didn't start his blog to 2012 or something.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy, man.
Crazy times.
So would you do anything else differently?
Nah, maybe start a blog earlier.
Yeah, you would do that? I was going to say that too. Like, it would be cool to start, like, kind of like what we're talking about today, start the blog from zero, like, and document the whole thing. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, invest in crypto. Yeah, that shit's going to go to the moon.
And leverage.
Leverage is probably...
no, well, leverage for your crypto, mate. You can home equity.
No, leverage is a sensible one, I think. Manageable leverage. I'm not talking about going like 300 times or something silly like that. a manageable level of leverage. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it would be slightly easier now for me personally, because you kind of get to start again now. I mentioned this before, but like knowing what you know now. So you kind of know what would be slightly more effective way to do it compared to how you did it before. And you know, yeah, you just kind of know what will work for you. So yeah, there's that to consider. But it's also worth pointing out that it generally achieving financial independence does get slightly easier over time as like we become wealthier as a society and as our kind of incomes keep growing over time. Is that something that you've thought about?
No, I haven't actually.
Like in a big picture scale, it's something that has become and is becoming easier. And I think I don't see why that will change too much.
Yeah, you're right. Because obviously we have more and more disposable income as time goes on. Like disposable income was much, much less in the 50s and 60s than it is now.
To dispose of.
Yeah. Well, the temptations to dispose of it have also increased.
In unlimited ways. And that's the thing that I suppose catches us kind of off guard and is where our money ends up going if we're not careful with it.
Yep. Well, Dave, this has been a lovely discussion today.
Yeah, interesting, man. Interesting. I heard a few answers that I wasn't expecting to hear. So I think we, hopefully people found it interesting.
Yeah, hopefully.
I would actually encourage our listeners to have a think about what they would do differently if they're maybe halfway along their journey or maybe three quarters of the way along, what they would do differently if they were starting again from scratch. Because I think asking themselves that question and having that kind of playing this thought experiment will help them realize what they've learned. Because, you know, if you're forced to think about it, then it kind of slaps you in the face with, okay, I would do this differently. So that points out what you've learned about what's more effective than another approach, perhaps. So I think it's an interesting thought experiment for everyone to do.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another episode. So thanks for tuning in today, and we'll see you next time.